I'm pulling the plug on the pin.
Michelle, welcome to a conversation that you and I are going to have. Hello.
Hello, Geordie. Wow. I don't think, ever have introduced ourselves at the top of an episode.
Well, I haven't introduced myself. I introduced you. I'm Geordie, just in case you were wondering.
I'm Michelle. And this is Eavesdropping the Podcast.
And this is our conversation. Thank you very much.
And you're listening in.
Yep. If you'd like to, go for it. Yeah. Please do.
We love it.
We love it. Do you know why? Because we're intention seekers. That's why.
What?
We are.
I don't know. Is it attention? I don't know.
Yes. Look at me. Listen to me. Listen to me, everybody, for an hour. I'm going to chat with my friend and you're going to listen.
I've always been someone who's loved listening to chat. All the chat radio, and I think podcasts are just an evolution of chat radio, don't you think?
Chat radio. You mean talk radio. I've never heard it called chat radio.
Talk radio.
When you say chat radio, it makes me think of Chat magazine or Chat It's Fate, which I often use as a resource of referencing for this very podcast.
What do you mean?
Chat It's Fate. It's a magazine in the UK. Chat magazine. It's one of those really cheap. The paper feels much cheaper than your normal Grazia or Harper's Bazaar, definitely.
Okay.
And it's about things like, my boyfriend tried to murder me and then took all my money. Or my boyfriend married my mum. It's basically Jeremy Kyle.
Oh, Jeremy Kyle. I was thinking more like Dr. Oz or whatever.
All them. Any of them.
Yeah.
Phil. What's
Dr.
his name?
Dr. Phil.
Dr. Phil. And I'm thinking of the guy with the white hair. And he died recently. Donahue.
Oh, Donahue. Yeah. I loved Donahue. It was fantastic.
You just get people on who don't know who's the father, or maybe it's the brother, or maybe it's the mum, or, you know, and they all come on and scream at each other and everyone loves it.
I knew someone whose brother's best friend got their mum pregnant.
You knew that person?
I did.
Hang on. Brother's best friend? It's not your brother.
No.
Got your mum pregnant.
So my friend. No. Jen, watch out.
Your brother's best friend got your mum pregnant.
What?
No, that's not what you're saying.
No, my friend had an older brother, older only by 2 years.
Yeah.
And when the brother was 17, he got my friend's mum pregnant.
That's scandalous.
It kind of is, actually. It's kind of crazy.
She had the baby and they're a happy family now?
Yeah.
So your best friend is also your stepdad?
Yeah.
Great.
It's creepy. I mean, look, modern families, that's how it goes these days.
Listen, I've got a little something from eavesdropper Ray, who wrote in after our Bitza Supernatural episode a couple of weeks ago. When you were talking about the UFO spotting and the two congressmen, do you remember? What were their names? Can you remember their names?
Oh, the two ones that said, it's an angel.
I believe so. And one of them was called Tim Bird shit, according to Ray. He seems to think you were saying bird shit over and over and over. And he said that some of the quotations of Tim Bird shit were more bird shitty than others. That's a little something from him.
Well, I quite like that it sounded like bird shit. I do believe it was Birchit.
It was Birchit.
But thank you, Ray, because, you know, there's a soft place in my heart for you. A soft spot.
It's all soft, isn't it? The heart. Let's be frank.
Let's not talk about Ray and being soft in the same conversation. What? That's not very nice.
Don't listen to her. I've got something else to add as well from a couple of episodes ago. If you remember, I raised a WhatsApp conversation when I lost a guinea pig. I didn't lose the guinea pig. Let me point out, my husband lost his guinea pig briefly for a couple of hours in the dark because he let him free. Silly man.
You were pig shamed about it.
I was a little bit pig shamed on the local WhatsApp, one of the local WhatsApps, I won't name it, because one of the people on that WhatsApp is a listener. So she actually got in touch before the episode came out from the Swiss Alps, Michelle. That's right, listener. I'm going to name and shame. Listener Karen was in the spa on a ski holiday. She had a little time out because she found it all quite grueling, the skiing holiday, as you can imagine. And she was just catching up with her WhatsApps when she came across my guinea pig shaming. And she did laugh and laugh and also was quite enraged on my behalf. But particularly the part where a lady said to me, I would come and help, but my hips collapsed. I don't think I mentioned that part because I didn't want And she also noted how the conversation turned into a debate about whether small animals like guinea pigs can actually feel.
Oh, my God.
So we had a little to and fro in the WhatsApp. And then she said, you know, she's listening to a podcast, which is through Radio 4, the Sounds app. Basically, it's reading out community forums and WhatsApps. It's a comedian called Jade Adams. It's called Welcome to the Neighborhood. I did listen to it. It's not quite what I expected. Okay. She has guests on and they pick up random WhatsApps and they read out the funnier things. And it made me think about my WhatsApps and group messages. And I had actually received quite an entertaining one yesterday. And it was an arrangement to celebrate a friend and colleague's birthday. And it ended with, all are invited. Mark is going to bring some ecstasy and I probably won't be wearing a bra. So it's going to be an amazing night. To which Mark, and we're talking Rains Park Mark here. Sorry, Mark. Mark replied, just to clarify, I won't be bringing Class A's, but bras might be optional. Now, there's all sorts of people on this WhatsApp, just saying, but it was funny.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Well, do you know what? I got a WhatsApp the other day. Listeners of the podcast will know exactly what we're talking about when I say this. It said, hi, Mum, it's me. I've lost my phone.
Yeah, right. You're a scammer. Go fuck yourself.
They tried the it's me, Mum scam.
Hi, Mum. I'm using someone else's phone and bank details. Please send me money.
Yep.
Don't fall for it, people.
Don't fall for it. That was immediate delete. Well, that's great. I mean, good on you, Mark.
So moving on, last week's episode, the Corys. I was inspired, Michelle, and you know I'm on this journey of classic films with my daughter, who's 13 years old. Mm. We decided to watch Lost Boys together as a family, minus the youngest one, who's only 10, because I was concerned. It was quite bloodthirsty. But in fact, I got really confused while watching it, because yes, there was Kiefer Sutherland. There was, you know, your Jamie, whatever her name was.
Gertz.
Jamie Gertz. I was waiting for Lance Henriksen, the older actor, to appear and for them to all go on a road trip because I got it mixed up with bloody Near Dark, didn't I?
Oh, dear.
I loved Near Dark. Like, I loved Near Dark.
And Lost Boys you weren't so keen on. Then you were like, oh, this shit film.
I don't even think I saw it all the way through because I was surprised. I was like, what is going on?
The Vampire Killers.
They were both released in 85.
Right. Okay. Fair enough.
And I just have to say, though, Corey Haim, he was so fresh-faced and so cute. My daughter thought he was gorgeous. Yep. I can't believe that he was 16 years old in that one.
Yeah, look, he had a stellar career. It shot up as fast as it went down into the toilet. You know, yeah. It was very, very sad. And how he ended up, just really tragic. Because, you know, like we had discussed on the podcast, a couple of different decisions by his dad stroke shit manager.
Yeah.
And, you know, that guy could have had a career because he really had it all. He did have it all, you know, and he was the cuter, more talented one of the Corys.
You keep slamming the other Corey. Poor Corey Feldman.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry,
whatever,
mate.
Whatever.
She keeps saying.
But what happened to both of them?
It was very sad. And this is what I'm saying, you know, watching Lost Boys, it's hard to imagine that that sweet-faced boy, not only was he 16, but all the horrible things that had already happened to him from age 11.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
Speaking of that, by the way, we've got a little correction because do you remember you were talking about Alison Angrim, who was Nellie in Little House on the Prairie, the one with the big ringlets that everybody wanted to copy in the 80s? Those of you who are old enough to remember.
She was the rich bitch.
She was the rich bitch, but she had those perfect ringlets. And I remember my mum used to rag my hair so I could go to school with Nelly hair.
That was a wig.
Of course it was a wig. We didn't know that, though.
No, we didn't, because I actually read when I was doing the research for the Corey episode, inspired a whole generation for ringlets. You're right. Everybody wanted those bloody ringlets. And for the first 3 months of shooting, they were putting her hair in curlers. She was having to get on set at 3:30 every morning. And then in the end, she was like, I need a goddamn wig. I can't take this anymore. I'm too tired.
Good for her.
And they gave her a wig, but she had this awful, terrible metal clip that dug into her head the whole time she was filming. It was one or the other.
Painful
she couldn't
experience.
Couldn't win. Mm. Yeah.
But going back to her, now she has teamed up with the National Association to Protect Children because she was a child victim of sexual abuse, but not by the industry, Michelle, which you said it was her brother.
I didn't know it was her brother. I knew it was somebody in the family. I didn't realize when we were recording, then when I looked back at some different research, I was like, oh shit, I got that wrong. Thanks for clarifying.
Cleared that up for you.
We do like to have our facts right when we can.
Have you watched Bendel's in the new look yet?
Not yet. I've had no time.
No, fair enough.
No time. Have you?
No.
It's on the radar.
On the radar, exactly. I'm actually watching Night Detective, or no, True Detective, The Night something, The Long Night. I can't remember what it's called. Jodie Foster, so good.
Is Woody Harrelson in it?
No, but he is the producer.
Pin that.
Pin Woody, because today, peoples, we are still on a bit of a celebrity train. Choo-choo. I'm going to be talking about Charlize Theron to you today, Michelle. Is that how you say it? Theron or Theron?
I thought like Charlize Heron. Theron.
Charlize Theron.
You are all up in the South Africans. You know, you did touch on Oscar Pistorius and Reeva Steenkamp.
It kind of led to Charlize a little bit, yeah.
Keen to know what that connection is.
The research, essentially. But Charlize Theron, who is gorgeous, she put out a film in 2019 called Bombshell, which I didn't know about, Michelle. And when I looked into it, it was so bloody interesting. It's about a group of women, real life women, and it stars people like Nicole Kidman and who's Barbie, the other Australian actress, Margot Robbie.
Okay.
Who plays a fictional character. The rest of them are based on actual news anchors amongst the Fox News Network. It's about when in 2016 or 2014, actually, chairman of Fox News, Roger Ailes or Iles, I don't know how you say it, was accused of sexual harassment.
Oh.
On a grand scale. She was actually nominated for an Oscar for her performance as former Fox News anchor Megyn Kelly. And she's actually unrecognizable as Charlize. I mean, you can tell that Nicole is Nicole Kidman as Gretchen Carlson. But Charlize as Megyn Kelly, can't even tell it's her.
Why? What have they, prosthetics and things?
Yes. Or? They had Katsuhiro, who is the Oscar winner, I think, makeup artist from 2017's Darkest Hour, Gary Oldman. He made Gary look exactly like Winston Churchill.
Okay.
He then turned Charlize into Megyn Kelly. And he did so by shoving on a load of eye prosthetics, so much that she had difficulty blinking, and nose plugs to give her a turned up nose.
Okay.
And then they plopped heaps of makeup on top that wouldn't stick after being under lights all day and that would start
melting
peeling off.
So Jesus.
It was probably a really hard job for her to do. But what was even more shocking is that it is based on real life sexual harassment. It also came after a mini series called The Loudest Voice, which was based on a best selling book from 2014 called The Loudest Voice in the Room by a guy called Gabriel Sherman. That mini series starred Russell Crowe in a fat suit as Roger Ailes or Ailes.
Okay.
But I just wanted to talk a little bit more about that before I go into my full Charlize. Roger Ailes or Ailes, I'm sorry, I just didn't figure out how to say it. He was one of the most powerful men in television until he resigned in 2016 following the sexual harassment allegations.
Mm-hmm.
He was originally hired by Rupert Murdoch in 1996 to basically build this Fox News network from the ground up.
And he did well, by all accounts.
And he did well. And both Megyn Kelly and Gretchen Carlson accused him of sexual harassment after a long time.
Mm.
I mean, it had gone right back to the 60s, apparently, his sexual harassments. And it was claimed that he would inject sexual and or sexist comments and innuendo into every conversation, which included asking Gretchen to turn around so he could look at her ass, basically, and also commenting repeatedly about her legs or urging her to wear figure-hugging outfits every day. Now, Gretchen Carlson was a former Miss America,
okay.
And he would often publicly try and embarrass her by saying, in front of everybody, saying he'd slept with at least three former Miss Americans, but not her.
Obviously, he's of a different generation, right? Been around from the 60s. So he grew up in a time where this was considered okay.
Well, at that point, you've got people already being outed, and this is where the landscape is changing. Thanks to these women. Fuck yeah. Bring it on. She also claims that he said to her, I think you and I should have had a sexual relationship a long time ago, and then you'd be good and better, and I'd be good and better. And he's also said to have stated in that meeting that sometimes problems are easier to solve that way, meaning in the bedroom, not the boardroom.
Jesus Christ.
Six more women accused him.
Yeah, these poor women just have to put up with it because they want to keep their jobs.
2 weeks after his suit was filed, he resigned as chairman and CEO of Fox News, and then he received $32 million in severance pay. Megyn Kelly did not file a lawsuit against him, but she later claimed in her memoir, Settle for More, that she had been sexually harassed.
Yeah.
And there was another accuser called Lori Loon, who I think is also featured in this bombshell film, who had been harassed by Iles over the course of 20 years. She settled out of court for $3.15 million.
Mm-hmm.
And he had film of her dancing in her lingerie and reportedly said he was going to keep that in a safe deposit box for later so that we understand each other.
Okay, why does he have that footage for a start?
Because obviously he's had her in bed somehow. He was a close friend of Trump's and he would often give Trump the heads up if the lady anchors ever planned to surprise him with questions that might undo him, such as a really uncomfortable exchange that I viewed with Megyn Kelly and Trump, where he basically threatened her.
What?
When she tried to raise a couple of things. Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God.
About his conduct with women. He immediately said, now you and I could have gotten on better, but now you've said that. And he was already prepared as well, because Iles had told him. And this is in the run-up to him being elected as president.
What a creep.
He died a year after his resignation because he fell and hit his head.
Karma!
He's a goner.
That's what it is. But I want to know who got that 32 mil.
His wife.
Oh, so he had a wife.
He had a wife the whole time. Played by, in the film, our favourite lady with the long red hair.
Connie Britton.
Best hair in the business.
Oh, wonderful. This is making me want to watch it. But I have to say, Geordie, this film has had zero press.
I've never heard of it.
That's what I mean. It did not make a blip on the cultural landscape.
But, well, it didn't to me anyway, not in my little bubble in 2016. The thing is, I was looking into Charlize Theron anyway, and let me tell you a little bit about lovely Charlize. She, as you may know, was born in Benoni in South Africa. I think it's near to Johannesburg. She's on a farm. This is August 7th, so she's a Leo, like me, in 1975. So she's around the same age as us. Roughly.
Is that her real birth
year? I wonder.
I wonder too. I don't believe any of those Hollywood
birth years. You think she's a little bit
years. Older? Oh,
she looks great if she is. Her first language was Afrikaans and she learned English by watching American television. That's why she's got the American accent.
Mm-hmm.
For Charlize, growing up in South Africa during apartheid, she was no stranger to violence. It's apparently a very violent country, Michelle.
Yeah.
Then and now. And at 15, Charlize was once asleep in her bedroom when her alcoholic father held a gun to her bedroom door and threatened to shoot through it in a drunken rampage.
Oh my God. She didn't come from a great house.
She did not. She actually played this whole incident down to the media for years and years. And eventually she gave her first interview about the incident to ABC News in 2004. And she told how she was in her bedroom when her father and uncle came home in a drunken rampage. An aunt obviously had the heads up. So she called Charlize's mum, Gerda, and said they were on their way, so she was prepared for them to arrive. Her parents had had a turbulent relationship. Her mother, Gerda Maritz, was frightened for herself and her teenage daughter, Charlize, who had just arrived home from a break in being at boarding school.
Okay.
So Charlize says that she heard her father swearing and shouting at her mother to let him into the house. And then she told NPR in an interview, "My father was so drunk that he shouldn't have been able to walk when he came into the house with a gun."
Oh my God.
"My mum and I were in my bedroom leaning against the door because he was trying to push through the door. So both of us were leaning against the door from the inside to make him unable to push through. He took a step back and just, a la Oscar Pistorius, and this is the link, shot through the door 3 times.
Oh my God.
He missed them.
Thank God. Probably because he was drunk and didn't have any kind of sense of aim, but it could have gone wrong.
They were leaning against the door to stop him from coming through. She said, "None of the bullets ever hit us, which is just a miracle." Gerda had already raced to grab her own handgun, so she started firing it at him.
Oh, shit.
She said at the time, I don't know how many times, she said she saw him fall, and when she turned around, she saw his brother behind her, so she instinctively shot him as well, and he went down.
So she shot both of them?
Yeah. Charlize was in the bedroom still and she could hear the shots being fired from her bedroom, and then she heard her mother screaming hysterically.
Did they die?
Charlize said, When I went into the passage, I saw my father's brother. My mother was sitting in a corner of the bedroom crying, and she said, Charlize, I've shot them. I've shot them. Charlize swears to this day that her mother was sober at the time, and courts found Gerda's actions to be in self-defense. Yes, she killed the father, but not the uncle.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
This is fucking full on. Wow. I had no clue.
Yeah. Did you not know this?
No. This is all new information. I had no clue.
Charlize Theron's mother killed her father in self-defense.
This is news to me.
Practically in front of her. Not necessarily because she was in the room, but she was there.
That's the thing. I mean, you look at Charlize Theron and she looks so elegant and well put together.
Poised. Yeah.
Poised. You would never know that behind this beautiful mask is this crazy upbringing.
Yeah. You don't know anyone's story, do you?
No.
Until you do. So Charlene has since praised her mother's actions in interviews for making her the brave woman she is today. But she said she did live in fear for much of her childhood. And she said, I think what affected me more in my adult life that happened in my childhood was more the everyday living of a child living in the house with an alcoholic and waking up not knowing what was going to happen and not knowing how my day was going to go and all of it dependent on somebody else and whether or not he was going to drink. She said he could be very serious but loved to laugh as well and enjoyed life. He also had a disease. He was an alcoholic.
I just really struggle with the word disease.
It's a disease.
How is it a disease? I always thought a disease was something that you catch. You know, an addiction is, you don't catch an addiction.
Okay, he is unwell. Yes, but you can have an addictive personality. Like you can be more likely to be addicted to something than others. You can have a drink and he can have a drink. You'll end up putting the drink down. He won't. And it gets to that point. It's something that they can't stop and you can't control it. It's same with gambling, sex, loads of other things.
I agree. It's just, you know, we do talk about terms and language and how important it is.
Well, I would say it's an illness. Yes, it is. It's an illness. Illness can also develop.
An illness can develop. I think it's a predisposition that you would potentially be able to...
Jury's out on that one.
I think it's more about language that I struggle with, not with what's happening to these people, because obviously anyone who's an alcoholic, it's terrible. And maybe you do have more of a predisposition to becoming addicted to things. But
this is the language of the daughter of an alcoholic. So I'm going to allow her to use that language. I think that's fair because she lived with him and she said, you know, nature gives you an instinct and I knew something bad was going to happen. And she said, looking back, she would have done the same if she'd been in her mother's shoes. She would have done the same thing. She lived with this. She knew how hard it was.
I'm not taking away from any of that. It was more a language question or thought. But anyone, I think, who grows up living in fear, and especially in a country where dad's got a gun and he's drunk, like fucking terrifying.
I mean, that's scary.
Terrifying.
And not just that, the culture of violence. I'll go on to tell you a bit more about that in a minute. But I'll tell you who is taking away from that. In 2008, Charlize's aunt, Elsa Malan, she insisted that her mild-mannered brother would never have attacked his wife or beloved daughter. And this was in a book called Killer Women, Fatal South African Females by South African crime writer Chris Carsten. This aunt said, what's her name again? Elsa. Aunt Elsa said, we want to set the record straight. All those perceptions that Charles Theron, who is Charlize's dad, was some kind of a monster at home, were very hurtful to our family and everyone who knew him. He was a dedicated family man. His wife and daughter were the most important things in his life, except for the alcohol, I'd say.
Thing is, when you're a drunk, you are no longer the person that you are when you're not drunk.
And I'd say Elsa didn't live with Charles to the point where, I mean, maybe they spent their childhood living together, but not through adulthood. I'd say the best people to judge this would have been Gerda and Charlize.
And also too, Geordie, you never know what goes on behind closed doors in families. People can present a face to the world, but when it comes to their nuclear family, the family they've created, they can be wife beaters, they can be child molesters, they can be all of these things. You'll never know. I mean, obviously we don't know what the truth is, but maybe the sister doesn't either.
No, that's what I think. But she went on to say, he was a benign and mild-mannered man who could never lift his hand in anger to anyone. And she said of Gerda, on the other hand, that she could be testy and grumpy and never hesitated to speak her mind. And Charles always knew when he overstepped the mark with her, meaning Gerda, and then he would meekly try to patch things up. So she's trying to paint a very different picture. She goes on and says, as for his so-called alcoholism, we all knew that he loved his drink, but I never saw him drunk.
That's because she'd already left the party. You know, she wasn't there. Well, he was like raging drunk at 4 a.m.
Exactly, trying to kill his wife and daughter. Well, weirdly, Charlize's family home, which was the scene of so much trouble and upset, was also the scene for another gruesome murder 21 years later, Michelle.
What?
In 2012, five home invaders gained access to the property by pretending to be interested buyers for a used car because the owner, Barry Newman, sold used cars from it. Don't forget, it was a farm. There was a lot of land there. And his girlfriend had put a car on for sale. And these five guys turned up, gained access by ringing on the doorbell, saying they were there to buy a car. The gardener and a domestic worker let him in. Mm-hmm. And they tied the gardener and the domestic worker up and put them in a room, waited for Barry to return home, and put him in the bathroom tied up, then put a plastic bag over his head and left him to suffocate.
Oh my God.
And it's said that afterwards there were marks on his body that indicated he'd possibly been burned with cigarettes and a clothes iron, but that's disputable. And this was all for a couple of phones and some computers. That's all they got away with.
This also sounds very targeted. They weren't just going there to rob someone because they could have robbed the house without waiting for him to come home. They'd already tied up the housekeeper and the gardener.
That's true.
So there's something else going on here, I would say.
Well, I couldn't find any more info about that. You'll have to do a deep dive, Michelle. But listen, according to the UN, violence, particularly against women and girls in South Africa, is among the highest in the world. According to official statistics, 1 in 5 women in relationships have experienced physical violence by a partner, and many more have suffered other forms of violence by men they know and strangers.
Horrible.
So for Charlize, who lived through this turbulent childhood and was marred by the trauma, said it was the constant state of hypervigilance which pushed her to seek therapy in her late 20s. And she's incredibly proud of her mother, as I've said before, who she credits with shaping her to be the woman she's become today.
And also, Geordie potentially saved her life that night. It could easily have been Dad or Charlize in the coffin.
I think so. I mean, I think that he was going for Charlize in order to really upset Gerda, because I think there was always a close bond between these two women. But she told Harper's Bazaar in an interview, I don't know when it was, but she said that in 1994, she too was sexually harassed by a famous film director. Wouldn't name him. She said in 1994, she was invited for an audition at a famous director's home on a Saturday evening, and he opened the door in his Hugh Hefner pajamas and touched her leg when she was sat on the sofa. She left in a hurry, apologizing, and as she drove away, she got really angry with herself for not doing more.
Yeah, but you can't. In the moment, I think it's this fight or flight.
Or freeze. There's three.
Yeah, exactly. And the best thing to do is just flight. Get the fuck out.
She now runs the Charlize Theron Africa Outreach Project and co-launched the hashtag Together for Her initiative to help pandemic era violence worldwide and in South Africa. So good on you, Charlize. You've been through a shit ton of stuff then and now. And now she's raising her own children, and she's got her mum, I think, lives in LA with her. I'm not sure about that, but I think she does. And it's all happy days for Charlize. She's come out of the fire.
Well, that's what happens to survivors, you know. If it doesn't break you, it makes you stronger.
She's been an amazing actor since day one. You know, yeah. What was her first film? Monster.
No, she's had other roles before that. But, I mean, that's when she was that awful serial
Eileen Wuornos. Killer.
Yes. No, she's had other things before that. Can't think of what. She's been around the block.
Now, was she an awful serial killer? That's one for another day. Was she an awful serial killer, or was she a woman who'd had an awful lifetime of sexual violence and she was fighting back? That's Eileen Wuornos. Another one that she could have related to. This is the thing. She chooses roles that she can relate to.
I don't know enough about her story, so...
Oh, it's wild.
Pin that future episode.
I won't be watching that film with my daughter.
No.
Give that a miss. So there you go. Where do you go? There you go.
Wow. Well, thank you so much. I'd learned a lot just now about Charlize. But I'm not sure if you remember a few episodes ago, we touched on the fact that Woody Harrelson's dad is a killer.
Yeah, we did. I do remember.
And I said, pin that. Well, guys, the pin is here.
Pull that pin out.
I'm pulling the plug on the pin.
What?
We're going to talk about the insane story of Woody Harrelson's dad.
Well, this is something I'm not aware of, so I'm looking forward to hearing about it. Just getting comfy.
Get yourself comfy.
Hang on, that's not comfy. I'm ready. Tell me all about Woody and his dad.
Look, we all know Woody Harrelson for being this kind of goofy guy who loves smoking pot, playing the bongos with Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, yeah.
And look, before we even get into this story proper, I will say that there has been loads of press in the last 6 months about the fact that Matthew McConaughey's mum knew, in inverted commas,
knew in the biblical sense.
In the biblical sense, Woody Harrelson's dad.
Oh my God, that's a bit like the old best friend and the mum and, oh.
Well, look, speculation. These two dudes might be half brothers.
No.
Yes. All over the internet, Geordie.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. But look, that's another story because today.
We're going to be doing Woody Harrelson forevermore now, aren't we? We have to keep pinning and coming back to him.
I know. Honestly, he's got a lot going on, that guy.
I love him.
But we are going to look at the dark side of his family.
Okay.
And how his dad, Charles.
Like Charlize's dad.
Another Charles. Charles Void.
Void.
That's his middle name, Void.
Like nothing.
V-O-Y-D. Wow. I know, it's a bit weird. Charles Void Harrelson, and how he was arrested for 3 separate murders and ended up in jail for killing a judge. Oh. And he might well have killed countless others.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's fucking insane. We're going to go back to Woody. He was born Woodrow Tracy Harrelson. I mean, Tracy. That's a name right there. Tracy.
What was the first name? Woodrow.
Woodrow. Woodrow Tracy Harrelson. Yep. In Midland, Texas, July 23, 1961, to parents Diane and Charles. Now, Diane was a secretary and she was basically the breadwinner in the family because Woody's dad was off trying to be some kind of an apprentice doing some kind of trade. I don't know what. But reading between the lines, I think apprentice is basically shorthand for unemployed or...
Oh, okay. Drug dealer?
Yeah. Because basically by unemployed, I think gangster.
Right.
Drug dealer, whatever it was going. Because Charles Void Harrelson was into all kind of underworld shit and essentially was just an absent father. And he was raised poor. Woody was raised poor. He had 2 brothers, was brought up a Presbyterian. And I did read, actually, that he was very taken with religion. And that when he was younger, he did entertain ideas of being a minister.
Wow.
Obviously, that didn't stick.
Thank God.
Yeah, thank God. But also, too, you know, he loves his weed. I'm not sure that that was really going to be a match made in heaven. Basically, after his father Charles left the family, Diane packed up the boys and they moved back to Diane's hometown of Lebanon in Ohio. And the couple were officially divorced in 1965. So Woody was 4 at this point. And in later interviews, he says he never knew his dad when he was a kid. The thing is, coming from this kind of broken family, especially in the early 60s, I think there was a lot of stigma around being a single mom with 2 boys and your dad didn't die. They've just split up. Didn't worry him. You know, he thrived in Lebanon, Ohio. He had loads of friends. He was a class clown. And I heard this clip where he says the first time he knew he wanted to be an actor was when he was at school and he was doing this Elvis impression. Everyone went wild for it. And actually, he was pretty good. I mean, it's really cheesy. I heard him do the impression, but he did a really great Elvis. And he realized he loved the attention, loved the adulation.
Like us.
Yeah, well, where's my bloody Oscar? Where's my $1 million paycheck? Come on. No, look, he loved it. And after high school, he went to college where he studied theatre and English. And after he graduated in 1983, he moved to LA because he wanted to be an actor. And it all went really well for him. I mean, he's that kind of one in a million who, hey, I've arrived in LA. Ooh,
and everyone's happy about it.
Oh, immediately gets an agent, immediately starts booking good roles. And people love him.
What was his first one?
He did commercials.
He must have had something pre-Cheers.
Well, he did commercials and I think he had small roles. I think he had uncredited roles. But he was definitely on people's radar and he was just charming, you know. And everybody loved him. Like, he was just friends with everyone. And everything was just kind of falling into his lap. And then his career hit kind of a turning point because he got the role of understudy on Broadway for a stage play of Biloxi Blues, which is, that actually did get turned into a film later, but it's a Neil Simon play. And little side note here, Woody Harrelson actually married Nancy Simon, who is Neil Simon's daughter, on a whim. They were just drunk. Oh, let's get married. And they did.
Oh.
And then the next day they went to get it annulled, realized they couldn't. So they were married for 10 months. But it was kind of a sham marriage. Okay. Look, while he's in New York being understudy for Biloxi Blues, his mate in LA calls him and is like, hey, listen, I just went for an audition for this TV show. And they said they're looking for a really dumb guy from Indiana. You'd be perfect.
Nice.
Yeah. And so he's like, should I be an understudy in New York on Broadway or should I be in Cheers?
Which is the biggest TV show of the 80s, one of them anyway.
Yeah. So he takes the role of Cheers and obviously his career blows up and he stays on Cheers for 8 years until, you know, the series finishes. As you said, in America, Cheers was the biggest show on television at that time. And every week it had more than 93 million people watching.
Did I hear that he also got the job because his name was Woody and the character's name was Woody and that way that any reaction he would have had would have been completely natural?
I wouldn't be surprised. I didn't read that. I have heard that before, but I didn't read anything to verify. But honestly, he's such a good actor. You could have called him anything, but I think the fact that he's Woody, the character is Woody. And to be fair, I was never a Cheers fan. It was not on my radar. Did you ever watch it?
I did.
Did you like it?
I loved it. My brother loved it more.
Okay.
But I watched it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he was in sort of the second iteration of Cheers because the first one had Shelley Long where, you know, the whole premise was she was Diane and the very first series where she's sitting in the bar talking to the bartender. She's had an affair with a married man and he's leaving his wife and coming to get her. They're meeting at the bar and they're going to run away and start this amazing life together. And the whole show, she's sitting there waiting. He doesn't turn up. So at the end of that first episode, she's like, I guess he's not coming. And she puts on her apron and she goes back to work behind the bar. So that's the whole premise of that first iteration. And then someone died. And that's when they decided the next kind of wave of Cheers.
Who died?
The coach. The coach. Yeah. And then that's when Woody Harrelson came in.
Shelley coach. Long. Yeah.
Long was gone because she wanted to have a film career.
Kirstie Alley.
All of that. So it really kind of changed and really blew up. And the thing is, when I just said to you then, more than 93 million tuned in every week, you were like, nothing. I read that and I was like, what the fuck?
I believe that. It was huge and there wasn't a lot of choice. You couldn't flick around.
Well, I guess, it was the 80s.
Global.
Well, I thought that must be a mistake. But then I did read the population of America was 300 million at that point.
That makes sense.
I mean, and this is 93, so a third of the population was tuning in. So
I think you'll find the same kind of figures for Seinfeld.
Yes, actually, and MASH. They were all the huge TV shows at the time. Look, anyway, after Cheers wraps up, Woody goes on to have this brilliant TV and film career with movies like White Men Can't Jump, Natural Born Killers.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet.
Indecent Proposal, Kingpin.
Oh. Kingpin, I love that.
Everyone loves Kingpin. People versus Larry Flint.
I haven't seen that one.
I have, with Courtney Love, who got nominated for an Oscar, who won an only. And obviously, there was a Milos Forman movie. And, oh man, if you go on YouTube and hear her ranting about how her career was basically fucked over because of this whole movie, because she should have had, in her eyes, this brilliant career after that in movies, because she was good, but she was just playing a druggie. Anyway, that's another episode. But yeah, look, you know, he was in other great films, No Country for Old Men, True Detective on telly, Hunger Games, Triangle of Sadness.
Yes, he was.
Which you saw. I mean, look, he's 62 and still working like a bitch, and people love him. And the thing is, because he's this goofy kind of guy and, you know, he's like advocating for weed and all this kind of stuff, no one poked into his background.
Right.
But there were rumors. Rumors like, hey, did you know Woody Harrelson's dad is a hitman? And it's so far-fetched. Nobody believed it. But then it turns out Woody's dad had been in federal prison since he was 6 years old.
Oh, six?
Six.
How'd you get imprisoned at six unless you're born there or your mother's?
No, since Woody was six.
Oh, okay.
Oh, my Michelle, God. Youngest hitman ever. She hasn't even been drinking today.
You led me up the garden path there. Didn't she, listeners? That's your fault.
Woody was six. I did probably say it in the way that made it sound like Woody's dad was in prison since Woody was six. Sorry. And look, Woody did come out publicly to talk about his dad on Barbara Walters. And I think this was maybe in the 90s where it did all come out about his dad. Because
he was forced to, probably, because the media started snooping.
Yeah, and she's a bulldog. It had all come out because he'd murdered a judge.
Oh, you said that before.
Yeah, and he was on Barbara Walters kind of defending his dad.
Oh, shit.
And he'd spent $2 million in lawyer's fees trying to help get him off the charge.
Oh, God.
And he was saying that the guy who supposedly hired my dad, Charles Harrison, to commit the murder was later acquitted on a retrial, so my dad should get off too. But in that same interview, Barbara Walters says to him that she's heard that Woody thinks his dad is ex-CIA. And Woody says, yeah, my dad was trained by the CIA.
Yeah, no.
And I'm Woody. Going, really?
Oh, fuck.
Really, Woody? Your ex-con murderer dad tells you he's ex-CIA.
He believes him because it's his dad.
Exactly. And you can't prove yay or nay on that, you know.
Did Barbara burst his bubble that day?
I think she was a little bit like,
really, Woody?
Really, Woody?
Wake up and smell the coffee.
You know, he wants to believe that his dad's ex-CIA because then, you know, it makes it all less horrible that your dad's a murderer, you know, and a crook and a shit father. But Charles Boyd Harrison, let's look at him. Born on July 23, 1937 in Love Lady, Texas.
No.
He was born a Love Lady.
He didn't call a town Love Lady.
They're loving the ladies.
Love Lady Texas. Charles Boyd, the Royd Harris. What's his name?
The Void. The Void's on roids. No, look, he's born in Love Lady. Love Lady because he loves them ladies. At 17, he's leaving Love Lady. And he's he's joining the Navy. And he does serve in the Navy until...
Sorry.
You got a problem with some Love Lady?
This is ridiculous.
Don't you be loving them ladies? Do you know what? I actually think Charles was a bit of a Love Lady, loving ladies kind of ladies man.
Well, clearly because he loved McConaughey's lady, didn't he?
He's loving all them ladies.
Oh, my God.
Oh, dear. Anyway.
Oh, it's gone wrong.
It has gone wrong. Ooh. But look, he was in the Navy. And look, it's not CIA, but he was in the forces.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. Well, anyone can join.
Anyone can.
Unless you've got a record.
Especially if you're from Love Lady.
And being a six-year-old hitman, he probably would have had a long record. So surprising that he got in.
Exactly. You know, they cleared his rap sheet.
Obviously.
So 1959, joined the Navy. Then after that, it goes a bit grey area. It's hard to find info.
Okay.
But what we do know is at some point he moved to Los Angeles and became an encyclopedia salesman.
Oh, that was a thing.
And a professional gambler. Yes, it was a thing.
Yeah.
Because there was no internet. You had to look up an encyclopedia for information. Uh-huh. Couldn't just go to Google.
And a professional gambler, that is still a thing as well.
Yeah. You gotta know when to hold him.
When to hold him.
Know when to fold him.
When to fold him.
Know when to walk away.
I know when to run.
Exactly. You never count your money when you're loving those ladies. That's not the worst.
Jesus.
Look, Charles moves to LA, meets his first wife, Diane, who's Woody's mom. And after getting married, Charles and Diane moved to Houston. But Charles is dodgy. And in 1960, he was convicted of armed robbery. Actually, later in life, Charles Harrison told police and other people that he'd been involved in dozens of murders for hire.
Oh, God. Since so he was a hitman.
The early 60s. Yep. He was
not
a hitman.
A serial killer, but a hitman.
He's Mr. In Between.
Yeah.
You know, he's not a good guy, but he's not a bad guy.
Not a bad guy. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so by the time Woody was born and, you know, a toddler, his dad was already full into a life of crime. Mm-hmm. And at around 1968, Charles just disappears from the family home in Houston. Just left his wife and three kids and just got further into the underworld. And we kind of know this because in 1968, Charles was tried for the murder of a carpet salesman outside of Houston called Alan Berg. Now, apparently Alan was working for his dad, Mr. Alan Berg, or whatever his name was, in Houston, and was coaxed into a bar by a phone call from a mysterious woman promising sex.
Okay.
Basically, see you in the alley by the side of the bar and, you know, I'll suck you off or whatever.
Goodness me.
Sorry. I'll give you some lovin'. I'm a lady that'll give you some lovin'.
Stop it.
He goes out all excited by this mystery lady phone call and was kidnapped and murdered.
Kidnapped?
Yep. And Charles must have hired some woman to make that fake phone call and then he killed Alan. And it's said that Alan's dad had huge gambling debts and the killing could have been a warning or payback for not paying those debts.
Oh, my God.
But no one knows. But what we do know is that Charles was tried for the murder of Alan Berg, but he got off. And if you want to read more about that case, there's a book written by Alan's brother, David, which was a New York Times bestseller called Run, Brother, Run, a memoir of a murder in my family. And he thinks that Woody Harrelson's dad or the mob, whoever hired him, fixed the jury or something like that. And that's how he got off the murder because the charge was in 1970. Now, back in 1968, Charles Harrelson was also tried for the 1968 hit on Sam DeGalia Jr. Now, apparently, Charles was paid $2,000, which not that much, even back then, to like knock someone off. And this did go to trial, but it ended with a deadlock jury. So there was another guy involved called Pete Scamardo. He was also tried in the case and was found guilty of being an accomplice to the murder and sentenced to 7 years, but of probation. On that basis, Charles was retried for this case in 1973, and this time he was convicted and sentenced to 15 years in prison. But in 1978, after serving just 5 years, he was released for good behavior. And he was like, of course, you know, I'm done with crime. There's no way I'm going back to a life of crime. I've learned my lesson. Thank you. I'm happy to be free. Less than a year later, when he and his then wife, Joanne, were both arrested for murder.
Both? That the judge?
Yeah. May 29, 1979, U.S. District Judge called John H. Wood Jr. was shot in the parking lot outside his San...
They're all juniors.
Juniors. Yeah, I don't know why. It's the Midwest. He was shot in the parking lot outside his San Antonio, Texas townhouse. And look, Charles would have got away with it, except obviously he did get convicted in the end of killing Judge Wood because basically he was hired to kill the judge by a drug dealer called Jamil Chagra because Jamil was up on drug charges and it wasn't looking good for him. And he was originally scheduled to have John Wood, Judge John Wood, known as Maximum John, because as a judge, he always gave the maximum sentence in his cases. Yeah. And this Jamil Chakra was scheduled to have that judge on the day the judge was murdered. So doesn't take much to put two and two together here.
No.
Now, Jamil was being represented in court by his brothers, who were both lawyers. And the brothers thought that they had client attorney privilege and that what they were speaking about was said in confidence and not admissible in court, which is true. But they did not realize that all their conversations were being recorded.
Uh-huh.
And it was during a visit from Joe Chakra to his brother Jamil in prison where they discussed killing the judge and hiring Charles Harrison to do it for $250,000. And okay. That's how he got done for murder. Otherwise, right. He probably would have got away with it.
Goodness me.
And look, when the police went to Charles's house to apprehend him for the murder, Charles starts yelling, screaming, all kinds of shit like, I killed the judge.
Oh.
And then he said, and I killed JFK.
What?
So, no. Yeah.
Calm down, mate.
People were thinking, is he just saying this because he wants to make it look like he was crazy? Thing is, nobody even mentioned the judge and he just came out with, I killed the judge. So he put himself in it. Yeah. But it didn't wash because no one believed he was crazy and also you cannot kill a judge and expect to get off lightly. And Charles Harrison was sentenced to 2 life terms in prison.
Yeah.
Basically lodged on Jamil Chakra's conversation with his brother from prison.
Uh-huh.
And the whole thing was really messy with plea deals and false accusations and perjury. And Charles's wife, Joanne, kind of had the book thrown at her. It's actually really sad because she said she was with Charles at the time of the killing and gave him an alibi, but it was all bullshit.
Right.
And she was sentenced to 25 years in prison for, perjury, and she died in prison from ovarian cancer.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's just so sad. She was just roped into this bullshit, trying to protect her husband. Circling back to the whole JFK thing, Charles had told loads of people, including the prosecutors in the judge case, that he was involved in the JFK assassination.
Huh.
Now, I will say that aside from being a hitman, allegedly, Charles also was a bit of a drug pig, loved his coke, was so coked up all the time. So, pinch of salt and all that with like all the tall tales he's saying. But apparently, there are pictures that show that Charles Harrelson has a really strong resemblance to one of the tramps from around the grassy knoll on the day that JFK was killed, November 22, 1963, and he was in Texas around that time. That was when he was home with the family.
Oh, my God.
So in some conspiracy talk, these homeless tramp types were actually posed as a conspiracy that they were CIA hitmen and squad members who were involved in the second shooting on the grassy knoll. Like we said earlier, he claims to be CIA.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, he lived in Texas at that time. So could there be a link here? I don't know. Wow. I'm just throwing out there what people are saying.
Okay, interesting. You've got my cogs whirring.
Yeah, because this whole conspiracy theory around the tramps, I mean, they call them tramps. They're just pretend homeless people or maybe real homeless people. I don't know.
Real. They could have been real.
Yeah. The whole conspiracy is that they have something to do with JFK's assassination and that Lee Harvey Oswald was just a patsy. But it does feel a little bit far-fetched. I don't know. But either way, Charles gets tried and convicted of first-degree murder, goes to prison. Now, I read a Guardian article where Woody Harrelson says, when he was a kid, he didn't think too much about his dad because his dad just wasn't around. And this is a quote. Yeah. It says, I was 11 or 12 when I heard his name mentioned on a car radio. I was in the car waiting for a lady who was picking me up from school, helping my mum. And I was listening to the radio and it was talking about Charles V. Harrelson and his trial for murder and blah, 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 blah. Mm. And I'm sitting there thinking, God, there can't be another Charles V. Harrelson. I mean, that's my dad. Mm. And he says it was a wild realization. Then the woman got in the car and saw my face and realized something was up. She was a very kind lady. I mean, can you imagine? That's how you find out your dad is a fucking murderer. And that everyone in town knows about it.
Yeah.
You know?
No, that's terrible. Poor kid.
So the upshot here is that Charles Floyd Harrelson dies on March 15, 2007 at the age of 69 from a heart attack. Yeah, in his cell at Colorado Supermax Federal Prison. Mm. And like I said at the top of the story, Woody had restarted a relationship with his dad and was trying to get him out of prison, paid loads of money to lawyers, but it didn't work and he died in prison. But I think he was a real character.
Yeah, sounds like it. And to have a son like Woody, you would be. Woody would.
Exactly. And I think that's kind of got him through life. Like when you're a big character like that, you know, it gets you through all sorts of things, but it also can get you in a lot of trouble. You know, you can love all those ladies, but it can also, land you in the hot spot. But he wasn't bad looking. Charles Harrelson was a good looking chap. And
I'll be looking up those links to feast my eyes on Charles Harrelson for sure. I bet he was a hottie.
Hottie, for sure. Much better looking than Woody, actually. And in 1988, Woody said of his dad, "My father is one of the most articulate, well-read, charming people I've ever known. Still, I'm just now gauging whether he merits my loyalty or friendship. I look at him as someone who could be a friend more than someone who was a father." So the dude's under no delusions, but he's still his dad. And no matter how bad he was, I guess he was still prepared to throw $2 million at trying to get him off the charges.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, considering all of this stuff and, you know, considering that his dad was a hitman, a murderer.
Yeah.
I think Woody turned out pretty well and he actually had a dream life. So,
yes.
Well done, Woody. And that is the story of Woody Harrelson's insane dad.
Oh, let's call him murderous dad.
Woody Harrelson's hitman dad.
That's more like it. Thank you, Michelle.
My pleasure. And thank you for all the interesting info on Charlize Theron. I had no clue.
I can't believe that you didn't know that. I thought everybody knew that.
No, I thought she was a privileged, beautiful kind of, you know, white South African who just come from the upper classes and, of course, breezed into Hollywood. That's what I thought. Mm. So you never know, do you?
No. You do never know. Absolutely. That's some childhood trauma right there that she's experienced. And to be fair, Woody didn't have a great upbringing either by the sound of it, with his dad not being present.
But you know what? I actually think he had a great childhood because his dad wasn't present.
Wasn't.
So, like I said, you know, once he went back to Lebanon, Ohio, he thrived.
Happy days.
Happy days, and he had the dream life.
Oh, good on you, Woody.
Good on you, Woody.
We love you. We heart you, Woody.
I'll link up all those links on the Patreon. And if you're not signed up to Patreon, please do. And if you don't have a coin to spare for us, at least give us a like or a rate on
all the places that you can go, like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. We need more friendly faces on YouTube because they're all a bit mean over there.
They are. They don't like those middle-aged ladies dancing.
But yes, we would love more of your support because we do give and give. We don't ignore you.
We do.
And Michelle, what is the Patreon account again? You go to patreon.com/eavesdropping. No G.
And, you know, we do a little bit of extra content once a month. We put all the show links up. You know, every now and again, we throw up some stuff that's relevant to the episode. So there are a few bits and pieces up there.
And there'll be more towards the end of the year.
Exactly. But look, Johnny, I think we've come to the end of the episode.
A natural end. A natural born end.
A natural born end. Oh my God, his dad was a natural born killer.
Yes, I know. That irony is not lost on me, Michelle. With that Woody Harrelson and Charlize Theron knowledge, I am now going to say to you, dear eavesdroppers, to remember, wherever you are,
whatever you do,
just keep
eavesdropping.
Eavesdropping. Eavesdropping. Eavesdropping. Eavesdropping. Eavesdropping. Eavesdropping. Eavesdropping.